Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome. I am video conferencing today with Charlie Morris, who's the practice leader for the Flexible Office Solutions team at Avis & Young. And I've known Charlie for a little while. Have we not connected on a podcast or had a deep conversation about what's happening in the flexible office space? So I'm really looking forward to today. And I think Charlie's perspective will be really helpful as we're thinking about kind of what's next in the flexible office industry. So Charlie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So Charlie and I were just discussing the joys of working from home. He has three kids at home. I have one kid and two dogs. So we're hoping everyone behaves, but you never know. So, let's talk about, I'd love to hear or share with the audience, because I know a little bit about your background, but your background and kind of you've been in various aspects of the flexible office space, and now you've landed at Avis & Young. So I'd just love to hear a little, some details about you and your background, and then we'll kind of dive into some details.
Great. Yeah, so started my commercial real estate career as a tenant rep broker. Was in that world for 12 years in your stereotypical brokerage practice. Candidly, I began to lose my passion for traditional brokerage as we know it, over the past 5-7 years, largely because I was paying attention to some of the quote-unquote disruptors that are out there, to use a buzzword. That includes not only flex office, but the rise of prop tech as we now know it. And there's obviously certain pieces of that that were going to be disruptive in various forms and fashions to the brokerage world. And candidly, I felt from the tenant rep side, we were going to be the first to be disrupted on that or disintermediated in some form or fashion. So I really decided to kind of shift my focus. And while I still did it with my brokerage hat on, really started paying attention to prop tech, flexible office as we know it, did various projects over the years within each of those respective engagements, did a number of things with Liquid Space for about 2 years while at Avis & Young was my last brokerage job, I guess I should go ahead and reference. After transacting various deals and engaging with institutional owners with Liquid Space, they asked me to come in-house, was in-house with Liquid Space for about 18 months. Which came to an end, June of last year. And candidly, I decided to move on from Liquid Space for a couple of reasons. One, it was a product-based offering. And while I very much believe in, the technology and the marketplace and the aggregators that are out there, we were pushing a square peg in a round hole in a lot of situations. And I wanted to figure out a way where I could be agnostic in terms of kind of how to engage with my relationships, clients, contacts that are out there to be able to be, service-based, not product-based in the overall solution. And that brought me back to, I was being recruited by various prop tech or even flexible operators to become part of their practice and felt I was going to be in the same bucket where I, was pushing a product or a certain solution and could not be truly agnostic. I called Mark Rose, the CEO of Avis & Young, and he basically explained to me that he was now mentally and financially committed to Flex Office as a driving force for the future of real estate and asked me to come back into the Avis & Young family. So came in August of last year and spent the better part of the end of last year kind of educating my own company about what they didn't know was out there. And building up the base infrastructure about what our team was coming to be. So that's kind of the high level background.
Yeah. And you've been building your team as well. So did this team just not exist before you came back in August?
Structurally, no. Obviously there was various levels of engagement within the flex sector, within AY, even myself prior to me leaving for Liquid Space and various other professionals that engage, probably more so from the occupier side, helping, get occupiers or into, flexible operator spaces. And with a few different examples of our professionals that were engaging with the operators in terms of expanding their portfolios, et cetera. And even from the agency side, transacting leases with some of these operators historically, yeah. but no true structure had existed prior to this, until August of last year.
So you've brought, so now you have a team. So Giovanni's on the team now. And his, you know what? I realized I don't think I've ever said his last name because everyone just know he's like Prince, right? He doesn't require a last name. Is it Pallavicini?
Pallavicini.
Pallavicini. Good. Okay. And then Michael Kloppenberg. So, you know, folks that I know. So exciting to bring some folks in that come from kind of other areas of the industry and develop a team. So all the brokerages are kind of developing, you know, some sort of internal framework to work in the flexible office space. Can you talk about kind of what is Avis & Young's philosophy and approach to serving your constituencies? Like, who do you serve? And that, so you, and this might take a minute, so go ahead. Because you talked about sort of, you know, you're less passionate about sort of fitting the one product to a solution. So it sounds like, you know, there could be many solutions to how you're serving, but I'd love just, you know, give us an overview of what your team does and who they serve and how they do it.
Yeah. So I guess I should go ahead and, you know, share the fact that, you know, as part of coming in without any true structure, you know, Mark and the C-suite at Avis & Young basically gave me a lot of leeway to educate them about, you know, how and why we needed to build something that was in fact different. Because you're right, all brokerage teams and other entities out there have some level of flexible solution. I'm not going to deny that. But what it was that we wanted to deliver that was different to me was the most critical piece of this. So in short, what we've ended up doing is building out, and our mission is to build a world-class flexible office consultative and transactional offering focused on the entire flex lifecycle, which includes three main verticals. It's the occupier community, the operator community, as well as the institutional owner community. And all of this is additionally supported by PropTech and Spaces service support partners in different forms and fashions. So it's taking that holistic view and making sure that we have a team that is 100% committed to flex in these respective roles, and being able to tap into resources available for being a part of a large brokerage company, which is now the largest privately held brokerage company in the globe. So I joined Avis & Young specifically because I saw it as an opportunity to, you know, engage with a company that could provide adequate resources and capabilities beyond even what we're looking to do, because there is no one-stop shop. There is no one ultimate solution, no matter how you slice it. And Avis & Young is set up in a capacity, because we're not publicly traded, that we can, you know, take certain initiatives differently than our publicly traded counterparts in this world. So, you know, we've chosen to take an agnostic service-based offering versus a product-based offering. That is one of the core differentiations you're going to hear from us over the years to come. For especially your constituents here on this call, I'm going to go ahead and put this out there. We are not going to have our own operator engagement out there. You will never find a HANA or Indigo or various other things you're hearing from some of our respective competitive set out there. Instead, we're taking that agnostic service-based approach versus a product-based approach. And we believe that's going to position us so that we can be, you know, unbiased and candidly not have any perceived conflicts that may come with that. So that's kind of like the high level thesis as to what it is that we're doing. And instead of taking a position from a local regional perspective, or even practice area perspective, i.e. occupier solutions or whatever the case may be, we're taking the holistic view so that we're not going to be jaded by any one local or practice P&L. Instead, it's one P&L that we can be able to satisfy the needs no matter where, what that requires.
So can we do an example? It can either be pre-COVID-19, since we're kind of in the middle of that, or post. How might you serve each of the constituents or each of the verticals, the occupier, operator, or institutional owner?
Yeah, I mean, so let me just kind of start there in terms of kind of, you know, what it is that we've built in terms of our core team. You mentioned two individuals right there, which obviously people listening to this are probably familiar. Giovanni Palavicini, his background is specifically engaging with the operator world, very much a social influencer as it relates to this space. And I will put him up against anybody in terms of the overall, you know, breadth and depth of knowledge and contacts in this market. So he, along with Michael Kloppenberg, the other person that you mentioned, his background coming from car companies and car workplaces as, you know, their own flexible offering they had, can bring in a combination of resources. And Michael and Giovanni are focused respectfully on Michael from the institutional owner engagement, Giovanni specifically from the operator perspective. But let's, you know, I think we all know, everyone on this call realizes these two worlds are coming together as one, more so than ever, coming out of this. So that is how we're supporting the operator and ownership communities. One may be the driving force, the other may be the driving force, but we have to have those two collaborating in the grand scheme of things. And from the occupier side, we've got about, let's call it 5.5, because we've got one person that plays multiple different roles for us. But from the occupier side, we've gone after people that have been serving in some form of enterprise sales role, specifically for the occupier community. And these people come from other flex brokerage organizations and or, you know, some of the large operators that we know of in some form of enterprise sales capacity. And in this model now, instead of, again, only having a certain product that they can bring to the table for their occupier clients, they now have the world as their oyster. And being able to find that right fit that specifically fits their specific requirement, because, you know, it's, you know, a lot of people have a perception that there's only 1, 2, 5 different operators out there that can satisfy these goals. Yeah. And there are thousands out there. And most people just have this perception that it's only the name brands that have marketing budgets and or media relationships. And some of that has been good, bad, or ugly, you know, in recent months. And it's being able to be, you know, a resource to make people realize there's way more out there than is commonly referred to, not only for our core clients, but even for brokerage professionals. You know, people know what they've read in the newspaper, and that's about it in our world.
Yeah, it's a great point. Those of us who kind of live it day to day sometimes fall into the trap of thinking everybody knows what we know, which is not the case.
Far from it.
So tell us, you know, your perspective. I was joking before we started about kind of all the activity on LinkedIn. And I love to follow you and Giovanni because you have a very optimistic perspective of coming out of the other side of this, although acknowledging things will look different. Can you talk about kind of, you know, what are some of the projects you think you'll be working on as the transition starts to happen, where folks go back to work? Like occupiers in particular, what do you think they'll be looking for and how will you help them?
Yeah, I mean, so while you may, and you know, appropriately do see the fact that we do have an optimistic stance on where things come, yes, just like everybody else, we've had to hit a little bit of a pause and or we've missed out on certain projects that we were actively working on heading into this. With that being said, I joined Avis & Young and we laid out a team that we feel is going to be differentiated as part of the change that has already been percolating in this world. And I think that, you know, I choose to take the glass half full approach as to what this, you know, crisis has led us all into. And I think at the end of the day, in the flexible world, this is going to end up being a very much a positive. Relating to what it is that we all believe and, you know, see as the future of commercial real estate. And this is going to be a tough period for a lot of individuals within this, you know, within our world. But at the end of the day, those that can come out of this are going to be well positioned for great success, because change is inevitable, growth is optional. And for that occupier side of what you're talking about, I think we're going to finally see that the occupier community is going to realize that what we've been preaching to them as the why is actually here. It's upon us, because we have all just entered into the largest global remote work experiment ever.
Right.
And there's going to...
Here we are. We're all doing it.
Exactly. And there's different pluses and minuses to a remote work strategy. And, you know, at the end of the day, those that choose to adapt to change are going to be positioning themselves for success. Those that revert back to the status quo are, to me, destined to be passed or potentially go dark in the future if we don't truly embrace the change that is upon us.
Do you have any sense yet, and it may be too early, around kind of when occupiers start thinking about, you know, getting out of the work from home requirement, where will they go first?
You know, you're not going to hear me make any blanket statements relating to
no
that
crystal ball.
Because,
yeah.
but I will go ahead and say that, you know, let's call it midsummer. Realistically is kind of what we're hearing as the best case scenario. For the most part. So we still have a few months before there's some level of engagement back to even a somewhat state of normal. That state of normal is going to be way different. But, you know, we believe that, you know, these last few weeks, month, have been just a time of, one, survival. People have been making, you know, tweaks, modifications, figuring out how to sustain their businesses in this period. And there's been a lot of tough choices, not only in the flexible operator world, as we well know, but even within large corporates and, you know, institutional owners have been making some tough decisions about, you know, how to keep their businesses going. And from this, we expect, you know, a period, and it's, we feel over the past week or two, it's really started to begin to shift where people are now strategizing. And I think the month of April and maybe into the first part of May, depending on the scope and scale of, you know, that person's portfolio or that company's portfolio, we're starting to see people lay in the groundwork anyway for what comes next.
Yeah.
And there is no, you know, perfect answer. It really depends. And we have to come up with bespoke solutions for an individual company based upon where they were, where they are, and candidly where they want to go more than anything. And those that really want to embrace are the ones that we're excited to engage with. And, you know, we've been very, you know, excited about the fact that people are now acknowledging that the change that we know has been, you know, bubbling is now coming to a boil. And, you know, things are about to really begin to shift across the traditional and the flexible world.
So with a glass half full outlook, we think the demand shift will be there. Do you have some sense as to kind of what the requirements will be at the location level? So if an occupier is saying, okay, we're going to use some flexible space, whether that's, you know, a serviced office, a co-working space, or, you know, a more flexible option that a landlord's providing, like, do you have any sense as to, okay, well, what does that look like? Like, what are their requirements going to be from a, like, health and safety and de-densification? And again, I know we're just starting to think about these things. So I'm just curious, whatever, you know, you've thought about.
Yeah, I mean, one thing definitively we've been thinking about, and we're doing our best to try to not be tunnel vision on any one solution, it's we have to acknowledge that, you know, some companies were more forward thinking and engaging in flexible office more than others. Those conversations will be a little bit easier. There are certain companies that have that core, what we call core or fixed long-term leases, as their main strategy today. Yep. Let's all acknowledge the fact that those are not going away. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The whole world is not going flexible, no matter how many people in our world would like it to happen.
The glass isn't that full yet.
Exactly. I mean, the, you know, core fixed leases still make sense in various situations. Flexible workspaces, whether that is co-working, executive suites, what we call agile suites, team suites, these type deliverables are going to be critical for certain pieces of their respective portfolio management strategy. And let's also be willing to admit that work from home is not going to go away either. If anything, that's going to continue to expand. I think, obviously, everyone's a little bit different. You and I have dogs, kids, various distractions that we're all appealing to. With that being said, I now acknowledge for the first time that I'm able to work from home in a better, more productive manner than I candidly thought I could in terms of doing it full time. So we have to admit that each of those three pieces are going to become part of that portfolio management strategy, and the percentage allocation to each of those will vary. You know, some will be more swayed towards the, you know, core fixed lease. Some will continue to be more from that work from home. And I think you and I will agree that, you know, the flexible workspace world is the perfect hybrid between the two, that we can tap into one or the other of those and be able to add value depending on the scope and scale of that. So that's kind of my first point there. Relating to our world specifically, in terms of some of the changes that we foresee coming, you said it best at the beginning of this. I think we have to be honest, we don't know fully. There is nobody that knows. Anyone that says they do is lying through their teeth. What is going to come from this is still too early to tell, because candidly, we need the market to tell us what it is that we need to be to satisfy what their needs are. Obviously, that is hard to swallow, or hard pill to swallow for those that have an established business that has worked to date, but there's going to be tweaks, modifications needed within each of these respective offerings or locations to satisfy what the new state of normal is going to be. You know, my perspective, and I think you will agree with this, is supply and demand is about to shift for the first time ever. I would say that as a whole, supply has been out driving demand for a while now. A lot of the supply that is out there has been going after the same list of groups and basically, you know, poaching. And that's actually been a detriment to what we're trying to do instead of going after the new groups. Some of that supply is candidly not going to make it. There are certain people that are in what we call survival mode that will be shutting their doors. I don't think there's any fact that that's going to happen. And even those high growth companies over the past 3-5 years, let's call it, there's a definitive pause that's about to happen here. And some of those even will be coming back, or not go live, at least in its current form. So demand, while we've been talking about it, we see rising. For the first time, demand is going to outweigh supply. And, you know, it's going to lead towards a lot of, you know, understanding about what all's out there, what's that right combination of solutions that fit that demand. And in time, that supply will catch up and hopefully be better suited to support the demand uses and requirements needed for the future.
Yeah, a lot of good points. I mean, you sort of make the point, it's a little bit of an evolving ecosystem, and it'll be hard to predict exactly what the ecosystem will, you know, there will be some demand requirements and some shifting to meet those requirements, and we'll try to predict some of those, I think, you know, before, to your point, strategizing, like, what will occupiers be looking for? Yeah, go ahead.
And I was just going to make one point on that for your collective audience. Yes, there's going to be changes needed within the flexible world. A lot of those same changes are going to occur within the traditional or fixed world as well. You know, I'm sure everyone has probably read about cleanliness being the, you know, new topic that's going to be out there. That exists across both worlds.
Yep.
Densification standards. We know that there's been a lot of talk about that relating to being a negative towards our industry. And let's be honest, a lot of that is true in various forms or fashions. Certain companies that have based their financial models based upon, you know, just crazy density standards, they're candidly not going to be able to survive in the current form without really updating their financial models, because that's just not going to be sustainable coming out of this. Especially not for the next 12, 18 months prior to vaccinations coming into play. People are not going to feel comfortable.
Elbow to elbow.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Dividers. Yeah.
So, you know, I think those operators that have been building out their space in a more realistic densification standards, you know, versus getting to the 30, 50 square feet per person, you know, within there, those are going to be the ones positioned for success, along with those that have, you know, relied on more private, you know, suites and or team suites within their respective location. And that's another thing that I think that public perception-wise about our industry has yet to candidly been acknowledged. People still have the stereotype that co-working as, you know, we know it is all open plan.
Yeah.
That is not Which
it's
you and
totally
I know
not.
Is
I know.
The truth.
There it's was an article in the Wall Street Journal today, and I was like, oh, come on, have you been in a co-working space lately? I mean, they were somewhat, I think, commenting on some of the more dense models that they see, but not, I think they were still kind of focused on the open plan piece. And right, you and I know, I mean, in general, the more hybrid model with a strong focus on, you know, team space, and even team spaces will need to be rethought, right?
Without a doubt.
Yeah. I will tell you my offices in Palo Alto that are have been perfectly satisfactory for my tech startup teams will probably no longer fly.
Correct.
Yeah.
When if you have eight people in that team suite today, at best maybe four in the future, and does that financial model make sense, or how do you modify the quoted rates into the future, and are people willing to pay for that? And let's be honest, I don't think anyone fully knows yet. But you know, all that densification, though, does translate to the traditional world as well, because you know, this is where our industry deserves a hell of a lot of credit. And let's be honest, we have to give WeWork a lot of credit for this. The traditional workplace strategy of corporate America has been shifted due to what has happened within the flexible world. And you know, a lot of those locations have gone more dense themselves. So they're going to also be rethinking kind of what they have, what they have to modify for the future to create themselves or set themselves up for success in, in the same ways that we are in our world. So it goes both ways.
Since you have an interest in prop tech, I'm curious, do you think... I'm really curious about timing. Jacob Bates posted an article on LinkedIn, or just kind of an opinion piece, I guess, on LinkedIn this morning, and kind of mentioned some of the technology that will likely emerge to support the health and safety standards. You know, touchless access and all the avoiding touching things, basically. How far away do you think that is? Do you think we're sort of in like an analog mode of like figuring things out for a little while after reentry is possible, and then the technology kind of backfills that, or any crystal ball on that one?
I mean, in short, I think that all of, what you mentioned, Jacob stated and others have stated around that. Yes, I think that again, beyond the flexible worlds, when we go to the grocery store, think about how much stuff we touch whenever we're just checking out. I mean, just,
or even looking at stuff. I was there last week. I was like, stop touching things. I had to tell myself, like, don't touch the cheese. Just look at it.
My high level perspective on this, yes. Technology as we know it will continue to evolve. Buzz or phrases that are out there, we all know, is innovation is born out of recessionary periods. We're gonna see more, unicorns that come out of this period, just like we saw come out of the last period. And there's gonna be various services and deliveries that are going to be very applicable for what we've seen in the past, and candidly, what we don't even know is going to be coming in the future. One thing relating to the prop tech and spaces service support partner world, I think we can also admit, though, that even what has been available to date, not every flexible operator or institutional owner has fully leveraged what is even out there. And I think it's taking this time to rethink what is out there. What is that right combination of resources, services, et cetera, that we need to deliver to set ourselves up for success? Another piece on that prop tech side, how have these respective entities grown? It's via, the VC, big private equity investment. These people are going to be licking their wounds coming out of this. A lot of the investments they've made will go bust. They're in survival mode themselves across some of these. So we expect a drying up of new investment in that for the immediate term. And so people can kind of figure out their current state of, from that VC private equity world, what does their, fund look like coming out of this? Where do they need to shift their focus around what they're investing in? I think the operator world needs to acknowledge that, with few exceptions, there's going to be very little access to some of that growth capital that has existed. And the operators owe it to themselves to be able to go prove out how they can do this on their own for a period of time anyway, And those that can position and lay out a financial model that can prove that they've got a, one, a proven model, a disciplined model, and actually, you know, something that they can present to some of these growth capital partners, you know, they're going to be set up for success, but there's going to be a higher level of scrutiny for the future for flexible operator investment, along with prop tech investments, at least for the immediate term.
Too much uncertainty for the growth at no cost. Yeah, I think one of the questions I had for you is sort of what, you know, what does a successful operator look like coming out of this? And I think you've answered much of that. I mean, to me, it looks like, you know, an operator that has some enough financial stability without, you know, the investment at any cost that can kind of make it on their own for a while, even if that stunts growth. And then, you know, to your point, an operator that can survive with a less dense model. And, yeah, you know, that may take some time to to work out. Can they retrofit existing locations? What does that look like? Does this only, you know, work with a management agreement or a more favorable lease? Yeah, there may be some, and then the technology piece. I mean, I think you're right. There are a lot of operators who are, you know, still kind of fairly technology light, and the ability to invest in, you know, sort of what's necessary to make the spaces user-friendly will be a requirement as well.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, you know, just on that note, I mean, it's all about having a strong foundation for their business model. You know, what that pro forma, their balance sheet looks like will vary, but, you know, we have to really put a fine tooth, you know, comb out there and make sure that we're looking at it appropriately. Identifying who their ideal customer base is and how to identify them is going to be critical, because again, everyone's been competing for that same customer base for a while, but there's going to be a new tranche of customers out there. And how do you make sure to position yourself to go and appeal to that group? It's also just stepping back and again, rethinking what you're doing in the realm of hospitality, experience management, you know, why there's even a need for flex, and how you deliver that. And, you know, going back to that point, it's, we're all about community, networking, collaboration, et cetera. But what does that mean within your organization? What is that culture that you want your prospective clients or members to understand about, you know, what differentiates you and your community? Let's be very honest. A lot of people claim they have a community, but they don't. And those that have, you know, set themselves up as true leaders in that world are going to be the ones that come out ahead at the end of this. And, you know, it may segue into another part of this. That strong relationship with landlords now more than ever is paramount. Those that just took that arm's length, you know, agreements or partnerships with their owner, you sign your lease and you never talk to them again, those are going to be set up for failure as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we've already seen the trend happening from, you know, going to the straight lease into the management agreements. Let's be honest, not everybody is set up and don't necessarily have the balance sheet or proof of concept yet to engage in those management or partnership agreements with the owners. But even those that have to continue down the lease path for the foreseeable future need to figure out how to not compete with, but partner with their landlord, even if they are in a lease situation, because there's a lot of, you know, perception out there that our world is directly competing with what the institutional owner, their agency reps are out there doing. So we have to figure out how to work together versus working separate. So that's going to be critical in the future.
How do you in from your vantage point see the owner's role shifting? I think you mentioned in one of your articles, kind of the owners getting a little bit more into the driver's seat in terms of their own flexible offering. What do you think that might look like?
Yeah, I mean, so to what we just chatted about in the post-failed IPO from WeWork last fall, I think we all began to see a dramatic shift from that lease towards the management agreement in different forms and fashions. We're going to continue to see that even more so coming out of this, especially for those that are going to be given their space back. These landlords are going to be left with a, you know, a space that they've got to figure out what to do with. I don't think that most institutional owners are even willing or want to take this on themselves. Yep. So they're going to need a partner to be able to help manage this, you know, on their behalf and operate this on their behalf. So my perspective in terms of kind of landlords hopping into the driver's seat falls into, you know, some of the trends we've already seen coming where a lease, it's just that, it's an arm length arrangement. There's little to no partnership with that owner. But in this management and JV partnership agreement world that we're seeing, that is obvious that the ownership, you know, is oftentimes more the driver of whatever that is. And whoever that operator is needs to demonstrate that this is not a separate entity. This is part of that asset ecosystem.
Yep.
And it's a true amenity, and it can be a checkbox every building is going to need to have in the future in terms of being able to deliver a flexible experience within that asset. You know, where I make a line that I get made fun of by my team quite a bit saying this, and some people on your respective audience may not like this, but co-working is flexible, but flexible does not necessarily mean co-working in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And we have to acknowledge that fact that co-working is a piece of it. And we've all heard some of the stats from capital markets or institutional owners that have said they're willing to commit up to plus or minus 20% is kind of like the general rule of thumb to date. But that 20% is not all co-working.
Right.
It's, you know, let's call it 10% co-working, 5% some form of what we call agile suites. It's a new way of thinking about spec suites that the landlord isn't then in control of. Sometimes it is in conjunction with that flexible operator in some form or fashion. But it's also a combination of that amenity space and, you know, conference rooms, meeting rooms, just all of the respective components within that. Some of that is in conjunction with, some of it is, you know, in lieu of, where it's operated separately. And we need to see all of this come together as one. And that's one of our core drivers for the institutional owner community is don't let yourselves be fooled by some of these operators are out there acting like they can do it all. They're pushing certain initiatives that can be better for them.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Louis, come here. Not that exciting. Yep. Somebody's walking by, maybe. Are we over it? Miles, okay, sorry.
All right.
Do you remember what you were talking about?
Generally. I'm going to go back.
Okay.
You know, our perspective is that the, you know, institutional owners that are out there acknowledge the fact that they need to bring some form of flexible operator within the realm of their, you know, overall asset management strategy, what we call, again, that core plus flex asset management strategy. And from my perspective, the winners in the operator world are going to be those that can deliver and truly partner in a holistic view, understanding what the landlord's goals and objectives are, how they fit into that mold, and how they can collectively go and position that asset and their respective co-working operation for success in the future.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that that's a competency that, you know, needs to be developed regardless of what's happening kind of, you know, in our immediate environment. And that's one of those things that will continue to evolve. But I also wonder if some of that will advance a little bit because we may need each other even more today, right? Like that sort of relationship and what people expect out of their workplace and even operators needing landlords and sort of vice versa to sort of figure out how to create that right workspace and to get that, you know, the breakdown of the 20% right.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And to me, that's where we have to look beyond whatever our particular offering is or our particular service. And it's truly integrating all of those respective components needed. And each asset, each owner is going to be different in terms of what they want and need to deliver to differentiate their asset for success in the future. So this is an opportunity for us to really rethink how the operator world is working in conjunction with, not in competition with, the institutional owner world, because both parties need each other.
So in sort of wrapping this up, if you were to give some advice to maybe operators and owners in the next over the next couple of months, what would you suggest they be kind of working on? What's the work to be done during the transition phase?
I think it's to, you know, where I hope most have already begun to do this. It's taking a step back relating to what has worked in the past and instead refocusing on what can or should work in the future. You know, it's hard whenever you've been tunnel visioned relating to your own respective business plan to date, but everybody, whether they have been uber successful in the past, is rethinking what they're doing and how to position themselves for greater success in the future and or even survival in the near term. So we have to be, you know, cognizant of, you know, what's working, what's not. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that we've built our team the way that we have. We want to be a resource to the entire flexible office economy to understand what we're seeing, what's working, what's not. And, you know, even if it is a small piece of advisory or and or transactional components, rethinking the way that you've done it, you know, reach out to people that are outside of your current operations and understand what else is out there. There may be little nuggets here and there that you can then use to begin to set yourself up for future success. Because, you know, again, that world is our world is changing, and those that can position themselves and, you know, demonstrate their role in the flexible office economy in the future have a bright future ahead of them.
Yeah, and your group is well positioned to sort of see what's shifting, what's working, what's moving kind of among your constituencies. And I think to your point, you know, there's a lot of value to that agnostic hat that you're wearing, and you'll add a lot of value to each of your constituents playing that role. Charlie, how can people, I will certainly link to your LinkedIn profile, and yeah. Charlie's fairly prolific on LinkedIn. Any place else I should help people find you?
Yeah, I mean, so email is charlie.morris@avisonyoung.com. My cell phone is pretty much my only phone, so I don't mind putting it out there. But I would say, you know, I'd start with LinkedIn and reach out, connect with us. We're, as Jamie has said, we're actively engaged in putting out different content pieces, creating our own content pieces. I will also go ahead and say, on behalf of Avison Young, we put together a COVID-19 resource center on our website that you can see certain pieces that our team has put on there to date relating to short and long-term implications that we're seeing in the flexible office economy. Plus, it's good to understand what all is going out there in the traditional world as well, looking beyond our space to figure out where you can take advantage of that. So please go and, you know, earmark that. There should be more pieces going out there on a semi-regular basis, and, you know, reach out via LinkedIn. I'm going to see those private messages, but and or my email, charlie.morris@avisonyoung.com, and happy to connect and see what we can do to collaboratively go through and set ourselves up for success, not only as an individual company, but candidly as a sector, because now is our time.
Wonderful ending. Thank you, Charlie. And I will link to Charlie's contact info in the show notes and the COVID-19 resource that you mentioned from the AY site. Charlie, thank you for your time today.